Welcome to episode 424 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. And we're doing something we've never done before. We're recording in a Microsoft facility.
I didn't think about that angle. Yeah, we are in Indianapolis today for the meetup. I don't know if it has a better name than the meetup, Dave, but it's Dave McCabe's home server show slash reset slash Surface Geek slash everything that Dave McCabe does meetup 2017. We came out here for this. We're having a blast. And yeah, you're right. It's in a Microsoft office here in Indianapolis. I totally didn't consider that. That's absolutely perfect for this show. We've done other remotes, just never at a Microsoft place. So we've got a little bit of feedback we want to get into. And I love this email from a listener, Tyson, because we frequently reference people as, you're probably listening to us right now and screaming at your phone. And that's what Tyson did.
He did. And he starts his message by saying, schedules direct. He says, yes, all caps, because that's how I was yelling it at my car today while listening to the latest episode when Kenneth asked for help with the recent Media Center Guide data issue. I would recommend schedules direct. I set this up earlier this summer with the last guide data fiasco and wish I had done it much sooner. Definitely an option he should consider. So, Josh, didn't we mention this?
Not last week, we didn't.
Okay.
During the previous guide data outage, we talked about some of your other options for getting guide data, but we didn't this time. And that probably doesn't really get it. Like, the fact that we've talked about it before probably doesn't really get us off the hook. I think Tyson is totally right. We should have brought it up again, but we didn't. So yes, schedules direct. There are other ways of getting guide data into Windows Media Center. If you're still using Media Center, you should probably be looking into those options.
Yeah.
Or maybe you should be looking to migrate off of Windows Media Center.
Yeah. Well, so that's a good point. And that's a really good lead into the rest of his message. This is a little bit long, but I really wanted to go into this because this is the perfect setup for discussions that we're going to have here while we're at Meetup. Mm-hmm. While we're going to be talking with people about their media environments. And that's what he goes into. So he says, I closed on a house 2 months ago and took a hard look at my options for TV consumption, living with a copy-protected cable provider. Media Center TiVo were the only options I found for whole house distribution and copy-protected content. Yes, I'm using Xbox 360s as extenders still. I decided to stick it out with Media Center since Schedules Direct was working for me after making the switch. The way I see it, the way we consume TV content is in transition. The masses are adopting streaming solutions, and linear TV is eventually going to be the smaller market. It would take some time to mature, but just as you went on to explain later in the same episode, people, who would have guessed Richard, are shifting from recording TV, brands hoarding, to streaming services. This transition will continue, so I don't want to invest in a linear TV solution that will become outdated and more difficult to work with. I'll weather the transition with Media Center and Schedules Direct until I find a mature streaming solution for all my TV consuming needs. My wife already uses our cable provider's app to watch content more than our TV. My four kids are on their iPads more than they ever use TV. The only perk is I finally have a chance to watch my own TV again without fighting for the remote. So basically, keep the Media Center box going a little longer. And when the streaming options are mature and stable, jump in head first. Was really hoping the new Apple TV would be this option for me, but I'm not so impressed with their recent offering. From a longtime lurker, keep up the good work. Still proud to have been a winner of a copy of Recorded TV HD from the live show back in the day.
Aw. Wow. That was a while ago.
That was a while ago.
Wow. Well, That was a fantastic message. Thank you again, Tyson, for sending that in. I think he probably did a better job of clarifying the current situation than either you or I did last week. So why don't we just give him the podcast to do from now on? yeah, there's a lot here. You know, we've got We've been here for over, well, about a day now, and we've had numerous conversations with people here at the meetup talking about how they need a new solution, that their tuners are dying, or their media center PCs are dying, or in similar ways to Tyson, it's just not getting the same usage. You know, at my house, I'm in the exact same boat as Tyson.
Like, right.
I'm the only one who watches the actual TV.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. All right, well, we are going to talk to some people here at Meetup. And so the feature in this episode is really Meetup 2017 and what some of the folks here are doing with media consumption. And we started off with an unboxing of an NVIDIA Shield, which kind of gives you an idea of where some people are going with this. And we're going to start talking with the host, Dave McCabe.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
How are you doing?
I'm great. I mean, it's good to have you guys doing your live show here at Meetup 17. I wish your listeners could see it. I mean, because this is really a neat facility. Microsoft hosts us every year, and we're able to bring all of our wares and servers, media consumption devices, cameras, automation. Last year, Richard, you gave us lighting demos and automation tips and tricks from your home straight here streamed to Josh. And
yep.
That was a first as well. So it's great to have you both here this year.
Well, and to keep with that spirit, I did bring some light bulbs for the giveaways later this afternoon.
I would expect nothing less than light bulbs from you, Richard.
Dave, we're super grateful that you've invited us all out here. We love the community aspect of this. You've done a tremendous amount of work to put this on, but I know you have sponsors that have helped make this happen too. Do you want to mention
the sponsors? I appreciate that. You guys are good podcasters. So HP Enterprise did sponsor Meetup 17, and they did pick up the lunch. And so we had some good barbecue. We had some good desserts and coffees and bagels for breakfast. So I really want to thank HPE. And we have other sponsors, ICDoc, a couple other, you know, smaller giveaways. And the biggest thing is Meetup has come full circle to all the attendees bringing not only their own gear, but purchasing gear to give to other members as mm-hmm. giveaways. So it's really neat. It's a fantastic community. It's not just a bunch of geeks getting together and, you know, meeting new people. These are like, it's like a family reunion almost every
That's
year.
That's a really great way of putting it.
That's a perfect way. So we're going to be asking people questions about how they're consuming media these days. And, you know, we asked earlier, is anyone still using Media Center? And you raised your hand right away, and I'm surprised, actually.
You know, a lot of hands went up, by the way, and I'm still pretty proud to run Media Center. I love the interface. I may be an old horse, and it's hard to get that away from me. And I listen to you guys every week, and I didn't experience, I would say, the last two cycles of guide data issues. And so you think, well, Dave, maybe you're not on your Media Center enough to see that, but I really think I am, because if, you know, some of those shows didn't get recorded, or if I'm flipping through Sunday afternoon grid guide and I don't see my football, I would know. So right. I don't know if I have a freak of nature Media Center or if Microsoft just knows, hey, that's that McCabe kid and he can cause a stir, because I would yell at him, right, if the grid guide didn't work. But it hasn't failed me yet. Now, that doesn't mean I don't have my eye open, because as you mentioned earlier, we did unbox the NVIDIA Shield, which I thought was a fantastic device. But I was talking with Josh earlier, and I said I didn't get that confirmation feeling or the warm fuzzy that would make my live TV and my DVR experience better. Now, I got, okay, Plex. It serves Plex great. It's probably going to do Netflix, Amazon TV, maybe Hulu. It's probably going to do that just as good. But how does it serve me with live TV and recorded TV? And I'm still not there yet. I'm still working on filling in those blanks before I feel that I have a suitable replacement for Media Center. Just like your email you were reading earlier, I agree with that person a lot. So if I do have these schedule issues, I'm going to go with that third-party service.
Now, you were showing us earlier this weekend that you still have some local storage at home, and you're talking about using Media Center. I assume you're still using it to record shows that you're keeping locally and storing until you consume them.
I do. I have a small HP. I don't even remember the nomenclature of the box, but it's a minier PC. I think it's a Celeron processor. It has local storage, and I also have scripts to move older recorded content to a server to keep. You know, most of the time we don't go back and watch those.
Hoard,
yes.
Richard's just trying to feel better about his own hoard.
I totally am.
It is, and I agree with you. So, like, PBS shows that are very large, like the latest one we're recording is about the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. A lot of my PBS material, I don't know why, but I feel like I like to hold on to it.
Yep.
Maybe watch it a couple of times. Things like that. Now, most other shows, it's just watch and delete. But I like to store a little bit on, it's on a Synology box right now in the house.
Now, how are you doing movies? Do you watch movies? Do you have a movie server? Do you use digital copy? What's that look like in your household?
Yes, but with caveats. I have always been the content, Home Server Show was my podcast for many years. And I would always say, hey, rip your stuff, keep it on your server, stream it to everywhere in the house. It's a beautiful, wonderful thing. Well, guess what? Kids don't want to do that. They just want to jump on Netflix and watch what's there.
Yep.
If it's not there, it doesn't exist to an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old. So I would say we once or twice a year stream from my DVD library. That's probably about 200 titles. And our DVD purchasing habits have dwindled by 98% fold. We probably buy one or two a year, just maybe because they're on sale, right? Mm-hmm.
So then are you renting movies and just streaming them through services? Are you watching through subscriptions? What's your primary consumption vehicle?
Primary consumption would be Netflix and Amazon. Being a Prime member, I try to take advantage of everything that they give me in order to get my money's worth out of that service. However, we have slowly come to the point where we don't mind renting even once or twice a month. We don't do it a lot.
Right.
But we used to never do it. We're like, oh my, $6. That's horrible. But if we want to watch it now, we just rent it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Well, thanks for joining us. We're going to ask a couple people up here to weigh in. So thank you. And thank you again for continuing to throw this over the years. I know you're threatening that this is the last meetup. I've seen the hashtag not last meetup out there. So I don't know what that means. But again, thank you for all the work that you've done in making this happen. This is a great event.
I appreciate you guys. You guys make it. You know, I did say last meetup ever, but I didn't mean forever. I meant let's change a couple of variables, maybe where we have it, what we do. So I want to definitely keep the community going because that's what I've always been about since we started. But let's change some things up. Let's make it interesting.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
So we are now here with Kevin, otherwise known as Scoondoggy.
Apparently Mr. Doggy to certain people.
Mr. Doggy.
Mr. Doggy, I like that.
It's formal. It's very formal.
But your name is actually Kevin Schooner.
That is
right?
Correct. That is correct. Thank you.
Now, you gave a presentation earlier today with John about the HP servers and what's happening with their new devices. And you talked about how the new Series 10 could actually be a really good Plex device. That was kind of fascinating to me because I have one of the older boxes, the N54L, or if I'm saying that right.
Yep.
And it's not really powerful enough to be a Plex server. So tell us a little bit about the boxes here. What makes them good for that use case? And have you played with this at all yourself? Are you doing this in your home?
Good questions. So, you know, I think in the past, a lot of the, I hate to stereotype, but NAS in general somewhat is plagued by underpowered CPUs. We tend to look at the fact that you don't need a whole lot of horsepower to talk to a few drives and get network connections going. So whether it's the microserver product lines from HP or even some of your, you know, entry-level Synology or QNAP products, that's kind of the theory is let's keep the price down, we'll keep the CPU down. But of course, as you've found, then when you start layering applications on top of that, things like Plex, where you need to do some transcoding or some other compute-intensive or memory-intensive functions, you don't have the horsepower for it. So the new Gen 10s, what's happened is they've gone to AMD CPUs. Not that AMD or Intel are better than each other, but they're using the A3000 Optron family. So the quad cores in the boxes we have are a little over 5,000 CPU mark, you know, if you're looking at CPU benchmarking.
Right.
Plus, on the new boxes, the Gen 10s, you can get up to 32 gig of memory, which is twice the memory you could get in the Gen 8. And that was twice as much as your N54 kind of topped out at 8 gigs. So
right.
Now we've gone from 8 to 16 to 32. We've got a decent, you know, a good CPU horsepower in the box itself. And actually, because the AMDs are APU-based products, you get R7 ATI graphics built in as well. So, you know, kind of mixing metaphors there. Some folks like to use them as home theater products and have them hooked directly to the TV. Other people prefer, you know, Plex server-like products. So so that's where it has me feeling like, you know, the hardware's a little more fine-tuned performance-wise, and CPU memory should tend to work a lot better with Plex server doing a lot of transcoding. To the second part of your question, I'm in the early phases of moving over to Plex. Had used Media Center in the past, have a couple of Silicon Dust tuners. Coming to find that, you know, even though my X1 Xfinity system is good, there's a lot of stuff that I would kind of just prefer to get off it and get on the Plex system and
right.
have easier access to it remotely. So we started heading down that route a bit more there. The other thing that I've playing with a lot that seems to be working pretty well is actually using Plex to manage my music library into my Sonos system. And I am one of the people who we won't get into why, but I have run into the 65,000 song music library issue with Sonos. And so far, I believe you can beat that with Plex. Plex, you know, is managing the library, so Sonos just talks to Plex and moves the data back and forth. So that's going pretty well so far.
That's interesting. I hadn't really thought about that. When they announced that they worked with Sonos, when Plex announced that it worked with Sonos, I scratched my head a little bit trying to figure out why I would want that. Why? How does that make any sense?
The only thing I've come up with is the song limit thing. But to your point, yeah, I'm not sure exactly if there's other advantages to it, you know, other management things. I'll probably learn more as I play with it and as time goes on. But so far, that's the one thing I've found.
Interesting.
So, Kevin, you said the new Gen 10 HP microserver has a CPU passmark score of over 5,000, right?
So there's two CPUs. There's the dual core AMD 3216 and the quad core, the 3421. That's the number for the 3421.
Okay, because looking at the Plex documentation right now, the passmark score, the CPU performance is what matters when if you need to do transcoding from your Plex server. If you've if you've got your native Blu-ray rips and stuff, but you're watching on a tablet, you probably want your Plex server to do that transcoding. Plex says for a 1080p 10 megabit per second stream, you want a CPU that gets a passmark score of 2,000.
Yep.
So 5,000 would be phenomenal. You probably be able to transcode multiple things at once if you've got multiple kids running around the house with phones and tablets watching things all at once. That sounds like a really nice machine for a Plex server.
Yeah, it should definitely handle it. I think the thing through the forums, we've had quite a few discussions, and I'd have to look up the numbers, but you know, there's obviously a 4K stream would be a much higher number.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at it, but I think even there, if you're running a 4K stream and maybe a 1080 or two 1080s, you should still be, you know, around the same ballpark. But
right.
Yeah, good. And that's something I think Plex has done a pretty good job of. The numbers they put out about kind of expected performance required to get things done seem to be pretty accurate.
Very good. Well, thanks for talking with us today. Absolutely. I appreciate it.
Always good a pleasure. Seeing you. Thanks for coming out, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're now talking with Jim Collison. How you doing, Jim?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Now, earlier today, we had the NVIDIA Shield unboxing, and we threw that up on the big screen and watched over the network here some movies, some TV. And you brought up a really interesting point. We gave you a little bit of grief because you showed from your home server that you had some stuff on there and that it was, I shudder as I say this, it was compressed MP4s that we were watching there. But you have a really good reason.
Yeah, well, I think for me, most of the time, I'm going to be consuming those in some kind of synced scenario. So I'm going to download them to my phone or watch them on a tablet or even on the PC. And so to move those syncs faster, you know, I can crunch that down a little bit better as well. And this came out through testing. I think Plex actually handles those compressed files better when it comes to fast forwarding and reverse. And my wife does a lot of fast forwarding and reverse. So to get the wife acceptance factor, I wanted to make sure it was fast. So yeah, I'm sacrificing a little bit of quality in the picture for a little bit of convenience on her side, as well as economizing on those data transfers.
You know, the fast forward and reverse is kind of like an evil necessary thing that I've gotten used to with Plex, is that I'm doing it blindly, particularly if it's recorded content, because I just skip forward a couple 30 seconds at a time and hope that 5 is the right number. And if not, after it finally catches up, try it again. And if it's too far, then I have to go back and say. So I like the idea that it could actually keep up with you. I don't know that I'm going to compress my video to get that solution, yeah. But I like that. Cool. It'd be nice if Plex came up with a better way of handling that. I know Plex people listen.
You think they will, and I would too. I kind of found that by mistake, right? I was using MCE Buddy to remove the commercials and then put it in that MP4 format for me. And I noticed when I was watching those, my experience with fast forward and reverse was just so much better. And so I started doing a little digging. Well, and it makes kind of sense, right? You don't have that big file it has to manage
right
on the back end, on the server end. And so I thought, wow, if my wife's really going to use this, and I hear her all the time on Windows Media Center going, dong, 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 you know, as she's fast forwarding through the commercials. I just thought it'd be better for us if I make sure I'm doing that way.
Yeah, this makes total sense, and it's not something that I had ever considered. Like, I enjoy giving you a hard time about compressing your beautiful recordings and your movies, although I'm not sure that the same argument works for movies, because why are you fast-forwarding through movies? But,
you make
a really great use case here that I had never, ever considered, or, like, the thought of it making fast-forwarding and rewinding work better, it never occurred to me, but it is really, really important. It's really important.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what device or devices do you use to then consume this in your home?
Yeah, in most cases for me, so I do a lot of stuff at my desk. So if I'm watching TV, I'm using the Windows app for the consumption of that. I watch a lot of live stuff on my phone. So now that we have some live functionality to it, if I'm on the road, sports on the phone is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And so no matter where I'm at, what I'm doing, to be able to pull up those live channels and watch them that way. So primarily for me, in most cases, it's going to be on a Windows device of some kind, or it's going to be on our phone. And my wife's Android. So it was really important when they made that work for both Android and iPhone. Mm-hmm. They finally got the whole family. So that's kind of how we consume them.
What about in the living room?
Yeah. So we have a traditional HTPC still running Windows Media Center.
Nice.
Like most everybody in here, it seems like today we're still on that. So I have not gotten Sarah, my wife, to completely convert over to Plex. Now, she said to me the other day, we're out on a date, and she said, "So when do I start using Plex?" And I was like, yes, she's thinking about it. So that's a Windows 7 box that I'm hoping. And actually, now that we saw this NVIDIA Shield,
yeah,
like, I'm in. Like, that's going to be the next media center box in our living room. I mean, I'm convinced that's the way to go. It really removes, you know, I've got like a Core i3 with 4 gig of RAM, traditional Windows PC that's running my media center, right? Mm-hmm. I don't need that much energy out there. And so it is one of those things. I like to pull that back in and repurpose it doing something else and throw that NVIDIA Shield up front. I'm sure the energy consumption on that's a lot less.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Absolutely. Very cool. All right. Well, thanks for sharing your story with us. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
And for the ribbing, you know, we had to give you a little bit of ribbing.
I like it. I like it a lot.
All right. We are now talking with John Biggs. John, you're the resident expert on like the picture perfect TV quality. I think you've talked about calibration. You were clearly one of the people jumping on Jim earlier today with his compressed video and showed how you have full quality video on your collection. You're also using Plex and still using Media Center around your home today, right?
Right. So I'm trying to transition totally into Plex, especially now that they have the live TV. I still find myself, Media Center is so easy to use, and the grid guide is how you find stuff, right? Well, and oftentimes I'll go there and find things, and if I want to record on Plex, I jump back into Plex to figure out where it is and set it up to record.
This guide thing is just killing me on Plex.
It's so hard.
And, you know, if that's the Roe v. patent thing that's holding us back.
Absolutely, it is.
Tell the Plex people, I'll pay them $5 a month, right? Get me a grid guide so I can just transition all the way from Media Center.
And that's a really interesting point, right? I mean, they are only offering this to PlexPass users. Typically, they end up migrating features away from just being exclusive to PlexPass and ultimately making them available for everybody. Not all of them, but most of them. And I imagine that's probably what they're thinking of doing here. But if they kept it there, yeah, I do.
I don't think they're going to move the live TV and recording TV stuff out of PlexPass ever because they have to pay for guide data.
Well,
so this is how you're paying for the guide data,
I guess. But I guess, well, okay, maybe that's true. I'm thinking if we're continuing to pay for this and they have enough people transitioning over to the service, and it sounds like, I mean, everybody we talk to here is like, oh yeah, I'm absolutely recording stuff on my Plex now. I hope that they do, in fact, realize that it makes sense for them to try and pay the licensing and do the guide right, because that's how you're going to get more broad adoption.
Right. And I still use a Media Center. I'm already paying extra for guide data because I moved from Media Center guide data to EPG123 with Schedules Direct, so I can avoid all the guide data outage issues.
Right.
So I'm willing to pay. Just get me a grid guide in Plex so I can just transition totally.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm curious, is your Plex server your primary media consumption device for movies and such, or is it one of like multiple services? In other words, do you still purchase discs and use discs for 4K? I'm kind of assuming you probably do. How about digital copy? Are you using any subscription services?
Right. So that's interesting. I used to just get a Blu-ray, rip it to Plex, and then I'll watch the movie from Plex there. Just right now, I don't have to watch any, you know, previews or anything like that, right? I can just go straight to the movie. But since I've transitioned to UHD and the UHD discs, now I find myself actually buying the discs in UHD, so because if I'm going to watch something and I can watch it in super high quality, why wouldn't I? Because unlike Jim, I don't watch stuff on the road. The only time I watch things is when I sit down and actually watch it in my home theater.
Right, right.
So I'm moving more towards purchasing discs than I ever have before, just because there's no other way to get the UHD for movies. I mean, it's I don't pay for Vudu. I don't pay for stuff like that.
That was going to be my next question.
So, yeah, right. Unlike others in this podcast, I do play for CBS All Access so I can watch Star Trek.
Yeah, I might be alone. Oh, I know I'm not alone there. I've talked to other people who don't want to pay the extortion fee to Uncle Les. But
I thought a la carte was the way to go. Everybody wanted a la carte, and here it is.
So I've worked in the cable industry, and I could tell you that a la carte was never going to come the way that people were asking for it.
Sure.
Just was never going to happen. Well, very cool. Thank you for sharing with us. Appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks, Richard.
So, Richard, we're here at the meetup. We've been talking to tons of people who are more geared towards storage. This all came out of the Windows Home Server community. But most of the people here at the meetup are also running Plex servers or Windows Media Centers. Way more people running Windows Media Center still than I expected. We asked everybody here who's still using Media Center, and at least a third of the people here raised their hands.
Yeah.
That's way more than I expected. The other thing that we asked is, because we've been having a ton of conversations with people about Plex, and we talk about Plex all the time on our show. And I think sometimes I feel like it's turning into the Plex show, and I don't want people to get like burnout on Plex, because we'll occasionally get messages from people who say, what about Kodi? What about MBE? So one of the things we asked while we were here was, how many of you are using something other than Windows Media Center or Plex? And no one was.
Well, and what was funny about that is that part of the reaction was, what are you talking about?
Right. Right. Yeah. There were questions like, do you just mean like over the air? Do you mean renting through Vudu? Like, no, we mean you all have these giant media servers full of movies and stuff. What are you watching them with? And they're all using Media Center and or Plex.
It is interesting. And I wonder what that differentiating factor is with this group, because we certainly hear from listeners who raise the issue of other services like, or other servers like Kodi and MBE and others, right?
Right. There must be others.
And we do feel like we're kind of leaving them in the dark a little bit with the focus that we have on Plex.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds, at least from our completely unscientific survey of people here today, there seems to be a preference for Plex in this community anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I want to keep watching. I think we've seen Plex really soar in the last year and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, me jumping to Plex was a big move for me.
It surprised me when you did it.
They got the experience right enough that I'm willing to make this part of my household environment. And, you know, that's one of the things we were talking about with a lot of people, is it's not just what you're comfortable with, it's also what your household is comfortable with. And Plex is starting to get the point, like Jim was saying, where the rest of the family can use it, or is at the point where it makes sense for them to use it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's everywhere. It's on every stinking device imaginable. It's on all of our consoles. It's on all of the streaming boxes. And it's on our mobile devices, which is so important for me, for the rest of the family. You know, when I'm going to go on a road trip, I can just use the syncing feature from Plex to easily copy movies down to my kids' tablets and phones.
Right.
I don't have to worry about, let's make sure I can get access to that movie from this computer, copy it here, plug the phone into the computer, copy it over. Like, that's a nightmare. No, that's awful. Like, now I just wait until the kids go to bed, grab their phones, open up Plex, bam, it's on their phone.
Yeah.
It's so nice. It's so nice.
Yeah. This has been a little eye-opening for me. I didn't expect the answers that we got, but I'm also glad that Media Center's not quite as dead as we might have suggested in past episodes.
Right. I mean, I definitely still feel like it's moving in that direction. The time is running out for Windows Media Center, and at least we have some other options. And I really like, you know, like what John said, where suggestions of let us pay to get a slightly better user experience. And John's not even the only person that said that to me today, that I would pay to have a grid guide in one of these other solutions. So I think we're moving in the right direction. I think to go all the way back to Tyson's email that we read at the beginning of the show, linear TV isn't dead yet. It's going to be around longer than Windows Media Center. And it's good that we still have things like Plex, like HD Home Run DVR, that are continuing to move that system forward for us nerds who want to be able to do anything with the content that we want to watch wherever we want to watch it.
Agreed. Well, we're going to have some news to talk about, but it doesn't make sense to do that here in this setting necessarily. So we'll probably just jump into the future when you can provide some news updates, and then we'll be back.
Yeah, 4 days of time travel, because I can't actually predict what's going to happen in the next few days. But one more time before we kill our recording here, a big thank you to Dave McCabe for hosting the meetup again this year. I certainly hope it's not the last meetup ever. I've been coming to these the last few years. I love them. And the reason I love them is all of the people who come. It is the community that makes these types of events great. It's not the tech. It's not even hosting it at a Microsoft building, as cool as that is. It's getting to meet all of the people who we're talking to in the forums, or who are listening to the podcast and writing in emails and tweets and all of that. That is the best part of these types of events. And so another big thank you to Dave McCabe for that, and to Jim the Barbarian, who compresses all of his content, Collison, for all of the help that he puts on getting this event going.
Absolutely. All right, well, I'll let you get to it and do the news.
All right.
Well, it is now magically 4 days in the future. It is now Tuesday evening. I am recording the rest of the news for this episode without Richard. Richard is traveling. He actually hasn't even been home yet after leaving Indianapolis from the meetup. So I'm going to cover the rest of the news for the weekend, and this shouldn't take us too long here. So starting off, definitely the biggest news, I discovered that Silicon Dust is planning to release two new over-the-air tuners in the coming days. They are both called HD Home Run Connect, but one is called the HD Home Run Connect Duo, and one is the HD Home Run Connect Quattro. And that is the one that's obviously a little bit more interesting. Quattro implies four tuners. And to my knowledge, I can't think of another TV tuner that's over the air that supports four tuners. We've seen that many tuners and more on cable card tuners, but not to my knowledge, any home theater PC based solutions like the HD Home Run. So the HD Home Run Connect Duo and the Quattro will be coming out October 8th. They both look a little bit different too. Silicon Dust has taken this as an opportunity to redesign the physical case of these tuners. And I gotta say, they look pretty nice. The cases for these are metallic. They are black or a very dark gray. They're very simple, very clean. There's nothing on the front or side edges. And then the top is just stamped with the HD Home Run logo. And then on the back, you just have the power connector, the Ethernet connector, and then, of course, a single coax connector to plug your antenna into these. So initially, these are going to be exclusively sold in the United States via Best Buy, and the Connect Quattro will remain a Best Buy exclusive through the holiday season. You're going to be able to get these pretty soon. Again, October 8th is when they come out. The Duo is going to run you $99. That's the price, the same price as the two-tuner HD Home Run Connect that the Duo is replacing. And then the HD Home Run Connect Quattro, the four-tuner model, will set you back $149. So it's twice the tuners of the Duo, but not twice the cost. So that's really, really nice to see. We did get an interesting question, one that I felt kind of ashamed for not knowing the answer to. Will these new tuners continue to work with Windows Media Center? So we reached out to our contacts at Silicon Dust, and sure enough, they will. There's no real change in compatibility with these new tuners. However, you are currently using Silicon Dust tuners, these will continue to work in the same way. So just some new hardware, some new physical case designs, and a four-tuner model for those looking to record four things at once. One other thing worth noting, the HD Home Run ecosystem, whether you're using HD Home Run DVR, maybe you're using Plex, maybe you're not recording, maybe you just have a lot of devices that you're watching live television on, you can just keep adding these to your network. If you've already got a two-tuner system, maybe you've got a two-tuner over-the-air system, plus an HD Home Run Prime for some cable card content, you can still buy more of these and continue to add on to your network and have more and more and more tuners. So that's always a good thing, and Silicon Dust is helping us achieve that. Our other really big news this week is actually in the audio department. Microsoft is giving up on Groove Music as a service and platform. Now, they're not giving up on the app. You're still going to continue to have a Groove Music app on Windows 10, on the Xbox One, on Android, iOS, all of those apps will continue to work. But the service, like Groove Music Pass, and the ability to purchase and download music from Groove Music, that is all going away at the end of the year. So after December 31st, 2017, you will no longer be able to use a Groove Music Pass if you already have it. And if you were thinking of purchasing a Groove Music Pass, well, it's too late. They've already disabled all of that. So if you've got a Groove Music Pass currently and you're wondering, well, what about me? My Groove Music subscription continues on into 2018 or beyond. What about all that money that I put into this ecosystem? Well, they're going to be offering prorated refunds. So you'll be getting contacted about that soon. Now, they're not just giving up entirely and leaving their users with nothing else to do. Microsoft is pitching this as a new partnership with Spotify. It makes sense that if they're going to partner with anybody in the music service space, Spotify is the one to partner with. They're the biggest. In my opinion, they're the best. It's what I've been using for a few years. It's what Richard had been using up until recently, which he was considering trying out Groove Music. Well, I guess he's probably not going to do that now. This partnership, it's pretty limited, actually. It's not like they're planning to do some new Microsoft Music service with Spotify on the back end. At least it doesn't appear that that's the case. Nope. The partnership instead is just a simple partnership for you to be able to migrate essentially your playlist. So in Groove Music, you've probably, if you've been using it, you've probably been building up various playlists, maybe for different genres or artists or things like that that you enjoy. Maybe your exercise playlist and things like that. Well, chances are any music that you've been listening to in Groove Music, Spotify probably has it. In fact, they almost definitely have it because Spotify's library is far bigger than the catalog of music that Groove Music ever offered. So what this new partnership enables is for you to be able to transition all of your Groove Music playlist over to Spotify. There'll be an app update on Windows 10 for the Groove Music app on the PC that should come out in mid-October. Once that happens, you'll be able to transition your playlist from Groove Music to Spotify. We don't know exactly what that looks like yet, but I would imagine this is going to be a fairly streamlined process. For some people, they'll also be offering a 60-day free trial of Spotify's premium service. That's the service that is most similar to what Groove Music Pass offers. It's listen to whatever you want, whenever you want, on any device that you want. Now, I said at the beginning of this that the apps will continue to be there. You're still going to have Groove Music apps on all of the devices that you've been using them on. But one thing you might wonder is, if the Groove Music service is going away, what about streaming my music from my OneDrive collection? Well, that's still going to work if you've been doing this. It's still going to be there. You can still put all of your music up in OneDrive, and it will continue to stream through the Groove Music apps on any of those platforms. So that's really, really good to see. Now, as I was reading through the FAQ for this transition, one thing that they said is that apparently some users are getting extra OneDrive storage as part of their Groove Music subscription. And if you fall into that category, well, your OneDrive bonus that you're getting is also going to go away at the end of the year. You're going to need to find another solution for expanding your OneDrive. They would probably prefer that you just sign up for Office 365. You'll get at least a terabyte. It might be unlimited. I can't remember now. I'm not an Office 365 subscriber, but you'll get a ton of storage in OneDrive if you are. Another really, really important thing to note here is if you've purchased music from the Groove Music store, you need to download, like if you want this music because you bought it, you need to download it because, again, after December 31st, 2017, which is only
3 months away, guys. After that date, you also won't be able to download that music anymore. So what you should do is go to the Groove Music app on a Windows 10 PC, filter, you know, go to album view, filter it to all of the purchased music that you own, and then you can select all of it by, you know, right-click on one of the albums. There'll be an option in there for select. Then at the very bottom of the app window, there'll be a button to select all. You don't have to click on every single album. Click the select all button, and then there's a download button, and it'll just start downloading into the music folder on your hard drive. It'll be in a subfolder called purchased. It'll all be there. You'll want to do that before the end of the year. And if you're still using OneDrive, toss it up in your OneDrive music folder, and then you'll have it forever, and you won't have to worry about losing any of that music that you've purchased. This is a move that I think makes a lot of sense. Groove Music as a service has never been a dominant player in the music space. It wasn't as Xbox Music. It wasn't as Zune Music before that. It's never been able to take a strong position in the streaming music industry. And I think Microsoft just looked at this and said, we're throwing a lot of money at this solution, and we're not gaining any ground. We've seen a lot of big Groove Music promos lately. There's been all of these Microsoft Rewards promos for many months of free music. There's been promos for buy 1 month, get a bunch of months free. They've tried everything of late, and apparently none of it works. So it's hard to blame them for wanting to get out of this. If they're not winning, and if they don't really have much of a chance at winning, then there's no reason for them to stay in this market. Another thing to consider is that music streaming and music licensing and music purchases and all that, that's never been a core business to Microsoft. And when you're out there analyzing various options for different services to put your money into, one thing to consider is, what is this company's core business model? And with Microsoft, it's never been selling music. Same is true for Amazon. The same is true for Google. Maybe to a lesser extent, you could say that about Apple. But Spotify, this is what they've always been all about. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why they're so good at it. So anytime that you're considering services like this, it probably makes sense to evaluate it from that perspective. Now, maybe a company like Microsoft or Google or somebody like that might still be the best option, but it isn't always. And if the service that you're looking for isn't that company's core business, then there's a higher risk of the service going away the way Groove Music is going away now. So always something to keep in mind. Now, another thing I wanted to toss out here for consideration is, what should this decision make us think with regard to Microsoft's other, especially their consumer entertainment services? The other big one that, of course, comes to mind is movies and TV, the ability to watch and purchase and stream and rent movies and television, you know, lots of different video offerings from Microsoft. It's available on less platforms than Groove Music was. It's only on Windows 10 and the Xbox One. You can't access movies and TV from Android devices, from iOS devices. You can't rent or purchase Microsoft video content on a Roku. It's a much more limited offering than what Groove Music has been. And that makes me wonder, how much longer is this going to be around? Because frankly, I use movies and TV and Microsoft's video purchasing platform far less frequently than I ever did Microsoft Groove. And I think that's probably true for most of you. If I'm wrong about that, let me know. I want to know how many of you are out there renting or purchasing video content from Microsoft. And if you are doing that, I want to know why. Like, what makes Microsoft's platform a better option for purchasing that content than something else like Amazon,
or iTunes or Google or Vudu, and there's a lot of options out there. So how much longer will Microsoft continue to offer this? I wouldn't be surprised if it's only months before that service also goes away. The other big core tenant in Microsoft's consumer entertainment stack is, of course, the Xbox. And that's one area where I don't think we have anything to worry about. Microsoft has been reinvigorated by their gaming offerings. They've only expanded the amount of effort they've put into Xbox as a video game console. They've expanded their effort in gaming on the Windows PC platform. I don't think we have to worry about Xbox gaming going anywhere, but I do absolutely worry about, actually, that's not even true. I'm not worried about movies and TV because I'm not sure that I would care that much if movies and TV went away, because I just don't use it. I've purchased very little content from them. So let us know what you're doing for movies and TV. And if you're a Groove Music Pass user, will you be switching to Spotify, or are you going to be looking at another solution? Let us know in the comments or an email or on Twitter, however you want to get a hold of us. All of our contact information will be available for you at the end of the show if you don't already have it memorized. Let's move on to our gaming news just a little bit here, and then we'll get out of here for the night. So we mentioned a few episodes ago that Microsoft had announced that they would be offering the ability for users to purchase games for other people, and that is now available for some Xbox insiders. Not everybody. I think this is only Alpha Ring right now, but you know, in just a couple of days, this could be expanded to more rings. So it's hard to even nail down what rings of the insider program have access to this, because it moves so quickly. But it's really simple. It works pretty much exactly how you would expect it to work. On your Xbox, you go into the store. You're used to seeing the button to purchase a game for yourself. Now there's another button. It says buy as a gift. You click that button and you're presented with two options. Do you want to send this to someone on your friends list, on your Xbox Live friends list, or do you just want to put in an email address? Either way, what's going to happen for the person that you're buying for is they're going to receive an email with a 25 character code for the game. We're used to seeing these codes for redeeming Xbox Live gift cards or digitally purchased games. So that's not new. It's a little weird that if you pick someone off of your friends list, that they're still getting an email. But I suppose maybe there's the use case that they're considering where maybe I say, send this game to Richard, and then Richard decides to give the code to somebody else. You know, he could totally do that since it's being emailed to him. So that's out now for insiders, and I would expect that we'll be seeing this released generally for everybody within the next month or so. That's typically how quickly new features progress from being insider-only features to generally available for everybody else. This week's deals with gold and spotlight sale, there's actually a lot of really good deals here. So just a few that I want to point out. The first one is BioShock the Collection. That contains three games, BioShock 1, BioShock 2, and BioShock Infinite. It's on sale for $30. That's three really great games for $30. If you haven't played the BioShock games, you probably want to jump on that. Another one that I really, really loved is a game called Child of Light. This is a 2D role-playing game. It's very family-friendly. Like, it's probably not easy enough for a small child to play on their own, but it does offer the ability to have a second player control a less important character throughout the game, a little lightning bug, basically. I really, really enjoyed this game. It's not super long, but it's got a lot of good content to it, and it's a really fun game to play. And it's only $4.50 right now. So
if you're into role-playing games and you're looking for one that isn't going to, you know, take you 50 hours to beat, check out Child of Light. If you're looking for a longer, meatier, and newer role-playing game, then Final Fantasy 15 is available. It's half off. That drops the price down to $25. That's a huge, huge action role-playing game. If you're more into racing, specifically rally racing, then Dirt Rally is on sale. It's $15. There's quite a few other rally games that have been released in the last year and a half since Dirt Rally came out, but I don't think any of them are better or more authentic than Dirt Rally. You should definitely check it out for $15 if you're into, and I would say if you're into hardcore rally racing. This is not an arcadey game by any stretch. So check that out if you're into hardcore off-road rally racing. And then another one worth considering, Middle-earth Shadow of Mordor. This is, of course, the first game in the Middle-earth series. There's a brand new one about to come out called Shadow of War. This is the first one. It was a fantastic game. This is the Game of the Year version, which means you get all of the DLC included with it, and it's $8. It's hard to beat an $8 game with all of that extra content. So definitely check that out if you're into third-person action games. Now that we're at the beginning of October, we've got some new games with gold to go over. But first, we've still got one hanging over from September. That is Oxenfree is still available up through October 15th on the Xbox One. Also on Xbox One, for the entire month of October, you've got the game Gone Home. This is a quote-unquote walking simulator from the same company that released Tacoma earlier this year. And then from October 16th through November 15th, you get another narrative-heavy game called The Turing Test. On the Xbox 360 side, but backwards compatible if you own an Xbox One, you get Rayman 3 HD for the first half of the month, and for the second half of the month, you're getting Medal of Honor Airborne. That's going to do it for our news this week. I'm not going to do our typical In Our Entertainment Center segment tonight for two reasons. One, Richard's not here to tell us what he's been watching. And the second reason, I was in Indianapolis all weekend for the meetup. Guys, if you didn't make it this year, you missed a really, really fun event. Dave McCabe was calling it the last meetup ever, but as he said earlier in the show, it's probably not actually going to be the last meetup. It's just going to be the last meetup, maybe in Indianapolis, or maybe that looks just like this. There was a lot of talk this weekend about hosting the next meetup next year in Omaha, which is Jim Collison's hometown. So I'm already, you know, very much considering heading out to Omaha if that's indeed where the next meetup happens. And hopefully, if it does happen next year, I will get to see you there, because it is so much fun to get to hang out with all of the wonderful members of this community for a weekend. If you want to hang out with Richard, the Smart Kitchen Summit is coming up very, very soon out in Seattle, Washington. If you want to go and you haven't purchased a ticket yet, you can get a 25% off discount using coupon code HOMEON, H-O-M-E-O-N. No spaces, no colons, none of that. Just HOMEON as one word smashed together for 25% off admission to the Smart Kitchen Summit. And then one more time for you guys, I'm running a 6.6K to raise money for cancer research. If you want to help donate to that and help me reach my goal, then you can click on the link in the show notes for that. I would really, really appreciate this. I'm obviously doing this year in memory of my mother, who I lost just a little more than a month and a half ago to cancer. So anyone who's jumping in to help out with that, I really, really appreciate that from the bottom of my heart. That's going to do it for this week, though. If you want to get a hold of us, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Josh Pollard, Richard is at Richard Gunther, and the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/thedmz. Of course, we've got other podcasts for you to check out. Richard's got Home On, covering the latest home automation news, and my other show that I do with Joe DeStazio, it's called Story Players, we're right in the middle of our Mass Effect Andromeda series, or if you've recently picked up Life is Strange Before the Storm, you should go and listen to Story Players Episode 1, where we go over that whole episode. We loved that game, and you'll definitely want to check out that episode of Story Players after you've played Life is Strange. And then come back and join us live. We normally do this show live on Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern using Mixer. If you subscribe on Mixer, you'll get notified as soon as we go live, or just follow us on Twitter to know for sure, because you know what? Sometimes things happen and Tuesday nights at 8:30 doesn't always work. So follow us on Twitter and definitely subscribe on Mixer to know for sure when that live show is going to happen. That's going to do it for episode 424. I'm Josh Pollard. Obviously, Richard was here for the meetup segment, and we were also joined by Dave McCabe, Jim Collison, Kevin Schoonover, and John Biggs during the interview segment. Thanks to all of those guys, and thank you for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.